Welcome in once again, everybody, to the No Noise Podcast. My name is James Fletcher.
I'm Trevor Pierre Noel, and last week I was mad. This week I'm ecstatic.
Ecstatic.
This is the best three-game stretch of Alabama basketball. Best three-game stretch of Alabama basketball.
It's been a really good day, not just for Alabama basketball, but for us as a podcast. Of course,
let them know
difficulties that we had
earlier in the week. But it ended up being the best.
Blessing
yes.
in disguise, because we have a lot to get to now today.
We have the Jermichael Green interview
that we're going to play for you guys just in a moment. We also have some breaking news that we're going to get out to you guys from today, just released as we entered the studio. But first, let's go ahead. Let's get to Jermichael Green, former Alabama power forward, five-star prospect out of Montgomery, Alabama, and now a Memphis Grizzly.
Jermichael, good to have you on. Thank you for taking some time out of your day to do this, to talk with us a little bit. We just got a couple questions with you, but first of all, I just want to ask how you doing. How's the NBA life? Can you kind of walk us through what your daily routine is?
Everything's good. Right now we're just getting out of practice. So normally every day we don't have a game. We have either a lift in the morning. Road work, just a slight workout before practice. We have practice and, we go about our day. But with season here now, games, they come like every other day. So, we're really much just pretty much just game prep.
Yeah, and I want to get to, before we get into some bigger questions, and we'll talk a little bit about Alabama too, I want to ask you just something our listeners really wanted to know. What was going through your head when you dunked on Ersan Ilyasova about a week ago now? What is that like when you're up above the rim that way?
Man, just reminded me of my high school days. Just when I turned that corner, I seen him getting ready to take the charge, so I just knew to just take off. So my first instinct was just to look, just to see if, I got a charge or it was a block. But, I was just filled with energy.
Yeah, and you talk about your high school days. Of course, you're from here in Alabama, and you stayed at the University of Alabama when you went to college. Can you talk a little bit about your experience here at UA and what that was like playing in college?
My experience at UA, it matured me. I felt like it built character. I went through a lot, with my suspensions and everything. Then, my first 2 years not winning, but, how we turned to the basketball program around the last 2 years, I couldn't be any more proud of the squad that I had. I got the chance to play with those 2 years. So, I built a lot of brotherhoods. I still talk to some players to this day. And, I felt like, Coach Grant got me defensively ready for the NBA. He changed my mindset to a defensive mindset, it's really taking me a long way here in the league.
Yeah, and you talk about your journey to the NBA and how he prepared you defensively. I know you had a good relationship with Zach Randolph there in Memphis. He kind of mentored you as you joined the Grizzlies and really got your start in a rotation role. Can you talk about your relationship with him and how that helped you develop your game?
Almost definitely. That's like he's my big brother. He definitely took me under the wing, and he taught me the ins and outs of the business, and just how to carry myself. And he gave me a lot of confidence. He was always on my side. I was there to give me constructive criticism, or to let me know where I need to work at, where I need to do better, where I'm doing good at. He was just always there for me. So I really do thank him for that.
Yeah, and now you have Jaren Jackson Jr. there with you in Memphis, a young guy. Do you kind of take that same approach that Z-Bo did, or do you have your own way of helping the rookie out, and or do you kind of let him learn on his own and learn what the NBA is all about?
No, I have my own way. Everybody has to learn on their own, to get a feel for the NBA. But when I see stuff in the game, if I can see if he has a mismatch and he could attack, I always let him know that, when he's playing well, I'm always there to cheer him on. You know, he's having a great season. You know, he opened a lot of eyes, and I feel like he's doing a great job this year.
Yeah, and the city of Memphis, the Grizzlies don't get a lot of national TV airtime, but Martin Luther King Jr. Day is the one day where they're kind of highlighted on TNT. They bring in crews, really showcase the city. So what does it mean to you to get to play on MLK Day and kind of have that spotlight?
It means a lot. It's not, as far as the spotlight goes, you know, that really doesn't mean anything. You know, just the situation, just the day and the meaning of it, you know, that means a lot, you know, especially with him, you know, getting killed here. You know, there is just a lot of history here. So it's always good just to, you know, acknowledge that day.
Mm-hmm. And so now I want to get a little bit, while we have you here, some of your favorite moments at UA. What were a couple of your favorite games maybe to play in, favorite teammates to play with?
Favorite games, I would probably say the game we beat Kentucky on the home floor. The game I made a buzzer beat on Auburn. And winning the Virgin Island, you know, the Puerto Rico Classic, you know, got a lot of memories, man. And, you know, my brothers, you know, to this day, you know, Trevor Relliford, Tony Mitchell, you know, Anthony Broth, you know, Chris Hines. I still talk to Andrew Steele, you know, still keep relationships with those players. Levi Randolph, Redden, I still talk to those guys.
Yeah, and my co-host here, he's got a theory, an interesting theory about Coleman Coliseum, about the practice gyms. He thinks there's something, some kind of bad juju with the free throw shooting, and he wanted your opinion on that, how you feel you shoot a higher percentage now in the NBA than you did in college. Of course, Colin Sexton shooting a higher percentage than he did in college. Can you just, I don't know, let us know how do you improve your free throws, and is there bad juju in Coleman Coliseum?
I never knew it was bad juju with the free throws. I never really paid attention to that. But, you know, as far as the difference, you know, in college you have classes, you have a study hall, you have a lot of stuff in between time that you have to do, and you really have to make time to get on the court yourself. But here, I mean, you paid to play basketball, so you had no choice but to work on your game and get better. So I probably say that's the difference.
Right. And so what advice would you have to the players here today and future players at the University of Alabama on how to handle being in college and being on the basketball team, being a celebrity around campus?
Man, you just got to be humble. You know, you can't let that get in your head. You can't, just got to stay humble. And I always know that, you know, school comes first, because if you don't have your grades, you know, you won't be able to play and get on the court. So, I mean, just my biggest thing, just stay humble, man, and always play hard each game.
Yeah, and I know you have other engagements, things you have to do, but we really do appreciate you coming on today and talking with us for a little bit, and thank you for your time, and hope you have a great rest of the season and a great career.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right, and that was Jermichael Green. A lot of good stuff.
He has a
there.
Funny laugh.
He liked your question.
Thank you, because, like, guys, this is my new conspiracy theory going around, is that Coleman Coliseum, like Memorial Gymnasium, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Vanderbilt's arena. Yes. I have a theory that Coleman Coliseum is haunted.
It's haunted.
It's haunted. And we're, like, Memorial Coliseum, it haunts the visitor team. For us, it haunts our free throws, okay? Yeah. I don't know what it is about this place, but it seems like when you're in high school, you make free throws regularly for our recruits. Like, they're usually about 800, 700, 800.
Was shooting about 90% in high school.
In high school. Then he comes here, and he averages, what was it, 71% basically, right? And now he's in the NBA shooting 800, okay? 89%. Yeah. Jermichael Green. In high school, I think it was 800% free throw shooter.
He was about around a 70%.
Around 70%?
Yeah. Okay. Now shooting 80%.
Now he's shooting 80%. Okay. He came here, he started shooting 71, 72. And then as soon as he left here, first season out, 800% free throw shooting. There's something wrong here, bro. Like, I think it's this place. I think it's this place. I'm also going to look up Red Obasanjo's stats overseas, really? As well. Because right, I have to know this. I
thought Michael had some good explanations for it.
He did.
The adjustment from high school to college. You got classes to worry about. Just this new,
he did,
new environment.
He did have a good explanation for it.
The NBA, that's all you're getting paid to do is shoot your free throws in the practice gym. So a lot more motivation there to get it done in a consistent manner. But... Now, Trevin, we've gotten a great interview with a great Alabama basketball player. Of course, his picture hangs in Coleman Coliseum. Now, let's talk a little bit about
the future.
The future of college basketball and of all basketball, really. Just moments
all right.
ago.
Oh, wait, hold on. I got one more thing to say. So, it's not his pro stats, but in the summer league, all right, Red Obasanjo here shooting 68% free throw shooting. In the summer league, he shot 75% for the Phoenix Suns. Tell me this place ain't haunted. There's something. I need to know what's going on. The free throw mystery. Give me a 30 for 30. Give me a 30 for 30.
All right.
On the free throw problem.
Let's get to some breaking news here.
Yes, here we go.
Tipton Edits has been releasing the names for the McDonald's All-American game. They're coming out live. So far... We got James Wiseman, of obvious choice, the number one recruit in the country.
Most definitely.
Out of East High School in Memphis. Matthew Hurt made it, a big man from up north who is still being recruited right now, has not made his decision. Nico Mannion, another big name. Josh Green, of course. You've got a couple of others. Jaden McDaniels, brother of Jalen McDaniels, who will likely go in this year's NBA draft out of out of San Diego State.
Fancy.
So we've got some family heritage there. But the one that you guys have all been waiting to hear.
Let him know.
Trendon Watford has been announced. He will be playing in the McDonald's All-American game on March 27th in Atlanta, Georgia.
It's a Wednesday.
Will you be making the trek?
Me? It depends on if I can get out of class. If I can get out of class, I see no reason why I shouldn't be able to make the trek. I liked Atlanta. I went to the Atlanta Hawks game actually this weekend. So it was actually a very nice time to go up there, watch them perform. They lost because they were going against my beloved Boston Celtics. But it was a good trick. Good trip. Atlanta was a great town. They were getting ready for the Super Bowl, so a lot of the main stuff was kind of shut down. The streets were really wanky and awkward because, you know, they're trying to get stuff in, trying to get stuff out. But for the most part, I definitely enjoyed my trip.
And I'll give you the best name by far on this list so far.
Yeah, give it to me.
Is Precious Achiuwa. He has been named to the McDonald's All-American team.
Oh,
what a name.
He's definitely going to get like made fun of for that.
Whatever locker room he goes to is over now that he's a top prospect in the country.
I mean, you're a top prospect, but you're still a freshman coming into college, bro. Those kids are going to eat you up. Come here, Precious. Come here, Precious. Come on, Precious. You can do it.
You might be right.
Come here, Precious.
But now,
oh, that's gonna be funny. I wish I could be in that locker room.
Let's go ahead.
Let's talk about Bama.
Let's talk about Alabama. They had a good run since we last spoke. Well, not since we
last spoke, but last time we were on the air.
Heard our voices.
I was very upset with them.
Technical difficulties.
Last time we spoke, they lost on a buzzer beater to Texas A&M.
Yeah. In Coleman Coliseum.
A
game they should not have dropped. They struggled from the free throw line.
In the past three games, they beat Mizzou on the road, a very, very solid team. Maybe not SEC team, but just a very solid team. It's a game they should have won, and they did, which is a rarity for us because we know our basketball team is very wanky about that. We go to Tennessee, and we got robbed from a victory there. I'm straight up. I'm calling it what it is. It was a robbery.
You weren't a fan of the travel call.
What travel?
Right.
What travel?
Right.
What travel? The only travel we did was up to Knoxville.
Right, you have to slow it down to a very
There's no slow it down. If you have to slow it down, you shouldn't have made the call in the first place.
Well, the ref was right on top of it, but that's a no call in that scenario.
You should not call that. It's the last shot of the game, okay?
Right. I thought about it was – if you're not going to call James Harden's setback, if you're not going to call guys on their way to a dunk, why are you calling it on a pivot when he's clearly making an effort to dribble the ball?
And he does dribble the ball. He does dribble the ball effectively. He gets it in. And the only thing that I could see that you could possibly call for is he may have taken one step after his last dribble before he picked it up. That's all you could do. But then he still does the – like I just don't understand how you call that as a referee. Like, that is literally a robbery of a game that allowed Tennessee to move up to number one in the rankings. And then here comes Tennessee again going into overtime with Vandy. Vandy?
Hey, it's Vandy. Memorial.
Oh, my gosh. Vandy.
You just got done Vandy. Talking about that.
Dude, Memorial Gymnasium is the worst place to play in all college basketball.
I'm sorry. It is. You have to sit on the baseline as a team.
As a team.
There's no fans within a mile of you.
Yes.
It is so stupid.
It is very awkward.
When the refs went to review all those plays,
our team should not be sitting where the Crimson Chaos sits. Okay, that's just not. Right. That should not be what it is, bro. Like, DJ Dirty Vegas shouldn't have a better view in Coleman than you do at Memorial Gymnasium. This is stupid. Vandy needs to fix that or something to where, like, they elevate the seats or something to where they can put them on the baseline and actually make it make sense. Right. Like, it's just stupid.
It's kind of their brand now, though. So
really, that's the brand? That's the brand?
It is.
Wow.
That's what they've gone with.
Yeah, it's a very strong brand going 0-6 in SEC play. Very strong brand.
Taking shots at a team while they're down.
Working very well for you. They're barely 500 right now.
They are. They're also without a top 15, a lottery pick in this upcoming draft in Darius Garland.
I thought basketball was a team sport.
I mean, it is.
I thought basketball was a team sport.
When you have a guy who was supposed to be the leader of this team and was going into the season.
Hey, next man up.
Any team will struggle.
Next man up. Next man up mentality. That's what you got to have, man. Next man up mentality. I know there may be a little drop off, but 0-6? Come on now.
Now let's talk about the game you don't want to talk about, and that's Missouri and our boy Avery Johnson Jr.
Going
for 14 points, look, leading the team in a 70-60 victory.
Look, here's my thing. All right, if it takes me getting onto Avery Johnson for him to perform like that, I'll take that bullet. I'll take the bullet. I will criticize Avery Johnson to the core if he gives me 14 points per game, which he doesn't. I'm sorry. He just doesn't. It was a very great game for Avery Johnson. He showed up when we needed him to. He really outperformed on the road. His floater was falling. His dribbles were going to his left hand, okay? Like, Avery Johnson was doing the things that he needed to do in order to get us to the next level. I appreciate you for you. I appreciate that a lot. But until that is the standard, I can't get off of him. I'm sorry. And as he keeps showing me, that's not the standard. That's an abnormality, okay? So when that becomes the standard, then I'll give Avery Johnson Jr. his due diligence and give him his credit. But until that point, I'm sorry, bro. I mean, it was a great game. I appreciate you for it. 14 points, very impressive, especially on the road. You definitely showed up when your team needed you to. I appreciate you for that. You did what you were supposed to do coming off the bench and providing a spark for the team that was basically struggling offensively. And that's all I can say. Thank you so much. But try and make this the standard, not an abnormality. Right. That's all I can ask from you.
Right.
Like, give me a reason to shut up.
Yeah.
Until that point, I can't.
Right. And he had the one game, and we'll see if he can get some consistency going late in the season here. But we said coming into this game, it was a stretch of 6 games over 3 weeks. It was going to be a very difficult stretch for the team. They had at Missouri, at Tennessee, who at the time was number 3, now number 1 in the country. You had a Mississippi team that looked to be hot and on the rise.
So our goal in this stretch was 3-3.
3-3 was the goal. 2-4 I didn't think hurt us too much. I thought that kind of kept us.
3-3 is the goal, and then 4-2 we smashed this.
4-2 puts us into real contention for a tournament spot.
Yes.
4-2 makes the committee look at us and say they have built a resume.
Which the more I'm starting to look at it, we're playing our best basketball at the right moment.
We are.
So I wouldn't be shocked if we beat Baylor.
Right, and Baylor is the second half of this 6-game stretch is at Baylor. It's an 11 a.m. tip in Waco.
Something tells me, because I hate Auburn. Mm-hmm. I hate Auburn. Like, there's only one team in the universe I hate more than Auburn, and that's Georgia. because Georgia likes to brag, but they don't have the trophies. Auburn doesn't brag. They're just our little brother, and they don't have the trophies. Like, they show up once every 4 years and start and, like, gets big. And, like, you know, yeah, we're the big dogs in town. And then Alabama comes around, slaps him across the face, and just like, all right, come on, pipe down. You're not ready there yet. But I hate playing at Auburn. It's the worst place to play for us as basketball fans. Just because the student section is very, very close in proximity, and our players can get rattled very easily. I don't like it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's so, the last game is at Auburn.
So I'm anticipating a loss for Auburn. And I'm man enough to admit, Mississippi State is going to be the key game to determine where we are tournament-wise. We had to win against Ole Miss to give ourselves a chance.
Yeah, we did. And
we smashed.
Did it in a decisive fashion. Let's talk about that.
Who's the guy that tried to get at John Petty? I forget.
It was Tyree, I believe.
Tyree, thank you so much for being so bad.
Yeah.
And for allowing our students to get in your head. That's basically what he did. Because apparently before the game, they were doing a shoot around and he was bricking everything. And so our students were taunting him. And then he turns around to the student section and says, I'm going to drop 30 tonight.
Mm-hmm. The team did not drop 30 in either half.
Bro.
Right. Alabama dropped more than 30 in both halves.
That was a good joke. And we could have had more in the second half, but we started to put in the reserves about 10 minutes in because we were just like, all right, this is getting enough.
Tyree finished with 9 points in 26 minutes.
I'm sorry, Tyree, but like your comments have no merit if Lawson Schaefer gets in the game. Yeah. Huh?
He's no Kyrie is what you're saying.
Kyrie is a big shot maker and a big shot taker.
That's what I was saying.
Don't
you're saying,
disrespect.
You're saying he's not that.
No. But here's the thing. Kyrie also knows to shut up as well. Like he knows like
does
when
he
does.
He's so kind like of been taking shots at his teammates lately.
Hold on, but that's his teammates though.
Right.
He doesn't take shots towards the other team. He has respects for the other team. That's your teammates. Like when he like it's all calculated. Like LeBron James, when he talks about his teammates, it's all calculated because he's trying to get a rise, he's trying to get a reaction, he's trying to make you play better basketball. Kyrie basically was on there saying, "Look, our team needs to play better.
Yeah.
We are struggling. We need to play better. I don't know what it is. It might be me. It might be other people." That's all he said was.
Right.
We need to play.
I did feel like that LeBron apology was a little bit of a shot at Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, though.
No.
In that the apology was for
not realizing how hard it was.
How hard it is to deal with young players.
Yeah.
That's a little backhanded towards the young players on the roster.
I don't think it's necessary.
Hey, LeBron, I now realize what it's like to deal with a stupid young kid.
But here's
the thing. I have to deal with a bunch of stupid young kids.
But I don't think it's really a slap to them. I think, again, it's part of the reactionary piece. Mm-hmm. Kyrie Irving, when he was the man in Cleveland, he was about 21 through 22?
Right.
Like, he just got out of Duke. I think he was 18 at the time when he first started playing for the Cavs, and then it was to 22. And he was the only guy there.
Yeah.
It was his team. Everybody else was veteran players. He was the young gun on the team. He didn't have to worry about anything. They just gave him the ball, and he shot it. Then LeBron comes there. They have their nice 3 years together, and like he elevates himself again. He's still the young gun on the team because he's under LeBron's tutelage. So this is the first time where Kyrie is actually the man at a place where he has people who are genuinely younger than him because even LeBron likes to bring in veteran players on his team. Mm-hmm. So that's why Kyrie is like, hey, like he's really been removed from the situation and has had to deal with the situation before. So he honestly didn't realize like what LeBron was dealing with. And it was more of an understanding of like, dang, we could have won more together. And I'm sorry that I robbed you of that opportunity.
Right.
But again, he's talking to his teammates. He's not talking to the team, like the other team. Mm-hmm. Like he still has respect for the other team. Like any basketball player knows the best way to win the game is to get in their head during the game, not before. Like, if you get in their head during the game, then they're throwing off their rhythm. Because they've already started the game, they kind of got into a zone, got comfortable, then you throw them off their rhythm, and now they're upset.
Yeah.
If you get them started before the game, then they're throwing emotion into it, and that can easily elevate people. if they have time to process those emotions.
The scuffle before the before.
And
the
that's
game.
Exactly what happened here, was that Tyree decided, I'm about to, he got, first he got the student section heckled, and then he decided to chime back at them. He lost, they lost the game as soon as he said a word to the student section. As a visiting team, the only thing you should do is not acknowledge the opposing fans.
Right.
Except at the end of the game.
Acknowledge that they were chanting Colin Sexton at you.
Right. At the end of the game, then you can acknowledge the opposing fans. Because you, if you win, then you have right to acknowledge the opposing fans. Because, like, we just beat you in your place. Like, what you going to do about it? You know, you're still taking his L. But before the game, nah, you stay quiet. You go about your routine. You do what you need to do. You allow them to say what they need to say, but you need to block it all out. And he did it. He allowed Luke and the rest of the Crimson Chaos student section to get into his head and start messing with them. And they lost the game right jump off right there. So, I'm not even, like, bro. And then, not only that, you have the scuffle. John Petty comes out there doing his thing. Y'all start an altercation with them. And John Petty looked like the man possessed during that game. He looked possessed. He looked like
another in a series of bounce back games for him.
He looked like he wanted to destroy Ole Miss. And I've never been happier to see John Petty play basketball. It was a measly 15 points on 6 of 10 shooting, 3 from 6 from 3 pointers. It's not his 30 point game that he had a while ago. But to me, this was his best game all season. Because he came off the bench, he answered the challenge that was given to him by the Ole Miss team, and he shined and provided a spark, and he kept the spark going throughout the game by hitting timely shots and hitting smart shots. That's the main key of that, is that he was hitting smart shots and passing the ball when he needed to. That was a major improvement.
Yeah, I'd still say that the Tennessee game was the biggest game for him because it really proved he was able to put up 30 points. And of course, he had the travel call at the end. But
that's why
he doesn't think he traveled.
No.
So that's not getting in his head that much. But 30 points, to just see the ball go in the basket that many times for him was huge, I think. Because the game before, he had kind of started to get into a rhythm, kind of back into things, finally starting to make some shots again. And then in that game, it really all came together. And, of course, we see him build off of that in this Ole Miss game, really coming back to be a complete player and contribute to this team.
Yes.
And one thing I was really, really happy about is Herb Jones played without fouling in this Ole Miss game. That was something that
I told you it was going to be a little bit of a bounce back game.
It would be a bounce back game. It wasn't a huge production night,
but it was a bounce back. He got 8 points. He got 8 rebounds, 2 steals.
He got back to locking things down on the defensive end without fouling.
Yes.
That was his issue. He had 20 fouls in the first 5 SEC games.
And now he's at 20 fouls for the first 6 SEC games.
Right. And that's huge. Just to be able to have the confidence.
Now he still
know that you can play defense without fouling.
He still shot 2 for 7, but he did make 4 out of his 6 free throws, which I can take. But the main thing is he played 27 minutes.
Yeah,
that's the main thing. When Herb Jones is out there, we are at our best. Mm-hmm. We are at our most productive because we know he's just going to take their best guy, and he's going to make it a long night for him.
That wasn't a given in the first few games of the SEC schedule.
Yes,
it was becoming a little bit difficult to keep him on the floor for the minutes that you really need him out there for, because he's a leader on this team.
Most definitely. Him and John Petty got the most minutes out there. The way John Petty's been playing, they might have to switch that lineup up, man.
I think Tevin Mack has to go back to the bench.
They might have to switch that lineup up a little bit. I don't know.
I
say you keep it going for one more game because you don't want to mess with something good.
Of the matchups that Petty gets when he's coming off the bench.
Yeah.
It's something that
you don't want to mess with something.
Are around the NBA and in college, a lot of them prefer that sixth man role.
Like Lou
Petty's
Williams.
Not someone I see. I don't see John Petty being the kind of guy who
relishes
kind of requests to come out of that role, at least at the college level.
So like
because he definitely wants to make that jump.
So like a Lamar Odom kind of guy, like a Jason Terry, a Lou Williams, those guys who
– Spencer Dinwiddie now is the big name.
Yeah, so those guys who say, look, I'm okay with not starting. Mm-hmm. I'm okay if I don't get the most minutes out of the guys out there.
Right.
But – when you put me out there, I have fresher legs than everybody else out there. And so therefore, I can be the man in the offense. Because usually, if you're the sixth man, you're replacing not necessarily the man, but probably the second or third man out there. And you're giving them an opportunity to rest for them to be used later on in the game. And so if you were out there, then the man is going to relinquish to you because he wants to get you going. You have the fresher legs, and he wants to save himself for later on. So usually you're going to get all the shots. You're going to get all the opportunities. They're going to make sure that you get the ball and that you're flowing and doing well.
Yeah.
And honestly, the more I'm starting to look at it, I think the six-man position with him coming off the bench but still getting high minutes is actually very perfect for him.
I think for John Petty, a good role for him.
Because he, again, like, he has fresher legs than everybody else out there. He can kind of sit back, and Avery Johnson can kind of dictate, all right, so this is the kind of defenses that they're going to kind of set up against. And so, therefore, I can put John Petty in the best positions to make these three-pointers, to drive the lane and do all these other things. And he can also sit back and realize, all right, I can do this here, I can do this here, I can do this here. Instead of actually trying to play it out and then missing shots, he can just sit back and relax. It's like, all right, let me think about this mentally. Let me collect myself first, and then I can go in and do it,
right.
Which and can I be think, good.
I think this entire SEC schedule has just been game after game for Dante Hall of proving why he should be taken at least mid-second round in this upcoming draft, absolutely tearing it up, another double-double with three blocks and two steals to go with that. He's just been
He's the most underrated big man in the SEC, in my opinion.
I think he could be...
And I think it's only because of his height.
He could be both one of the most talented and one of the most underrated at the same time.
And I think it's only because of his height that people
treat
him the way they do.
That height is a little bit negated by the length that he has and the jumping ability that he provides out of such a big frame. A lot of big men can't jump at the same level that he can.
And he can play at it. He's great at running the floor.
He is.
And
he's
like
got
that
awkward stride, but he
does
there.
Have that awkward stride, but he can get there. And then, so he's a great guy if you're coming down, like if you're wanting an up-tempo, up-pace kind of offense, he's going to get you those alley-oop dunks easily. And he's going to get the rebounds because he has very long arms. Mm-hmm. I think it would basically come down to his, to his mid-
To his knees,
Yeah, basically to his knees. He'd be walking around. He'd be running awkward. Yeah. So I definitely see him. If I were doing a draft, he would be mid to late second round, close to that. He'd be very close to the Mr. Irrelevant spot to me.
And I think that the way he's playing right now, it's only going to go up from here if he can keep this up.
He would be a great backup center.
That's
in the NBA.
I've said it from the start. I like to compare him to a little bit of a Jordan Bell, a guy who, in a spaced-out system, he's not necessarily going to shoot the ball ever, but he's going to set you a hard screen up at the top, and he's going to roll to the rim and provide you spacing that you need.
I still need him to work on his mid-game. I think he's backed away from that a little bit.
That's something he's looked to work on.
Yeah, I think he's backed away a little bit.
Percentage go down a little bit because of it, but that's something I'm okay with because it's developing towards the next level.
Yes, so I need him to take more opportunities on that and get himself the opportunity. But again, the defenses aren't allowing him to because they throw the ball down low to him for him to start working a post move, and they instantly crowd him. Mm-hmm. And then, like, on pick and rolls, he doesn't necessarily get the ball that much off the picks. So it's very hard for him to work on it.
Been calling for, but
any time you got a free shot in the mid, I need you to take it just so you can go ahead and improve on that aspect. Because if you can start making the mids, you already have the free throws down, which Dante Hall is the
free throw shooter on the team.
Dante Hall is the first person to beat the Coleman curse and improve as a free throw shooter in Coleman Coliseum.
Yeah.
So he started off at 48%.
And it took him 4 years to get there.
48% free throw shooting his freshman year. Like, it was atrocious. And now,
like,
here we are.
Big men.
Yes, it was atrocious. Like,
especially big men who can live above the rim, because in high school, Dante Hall didn't have to worry about the free throw line because he could just get up higher than anyone else who was on the court with him.
Like, yeah, he would easily get and ones if they did foul him. And so he always like, all right, I already got my 2 points. Let me just try get three. You know, I already got 2 points, so who cares?
Yeah, and that's maybe you even just lob it off the rim and go put it back if you're that much more athletic than everyone else out there.
Right.
So that's a different strategy that you can definitely – take.
And he's also very, very calming and very level throughout everything. So he's a great leader for our team.
He is a great leader, and he really, not necessarily a huge vocal leader all the time in the huddles. He leads by example.
Yes. And there's there's no better player than one who leads by example. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about the guys who got in the game late. They got to show us a little bit of what they
can do. The snowflakes.
The snowflakes.
That's what I call them. I'm sorry. I will apologize for that statement later if someone's upset by that.
And Britton Johnson.
Yes. I call them the snowflakes.
We had no one put up a trillion. For those of you who don't know, a trillion is when you register minutes, but nothing else in the stat sheet. No made shots, no points, assists, rebounds, fouls, blocks, steals, none of the turnovers even
count. Yeah, it's basically when you do the Avery Johnson.
Oh, he had a good game. He gets a pass.
That's my only joke for the day. That's your pass. That's the only joke for the day.
So a trillion basically means you were in the game, yes, but you gave no contribution to the result.
So they got in the game and they actually got on the stat sheet. They made ESPN, baby. They made the ESPN statistics, baby.
Tyler Barnes registered one block in his 1 minute. A great ratio.
Can I fanboy for a second?
Go ahead.
Can I fanboy for a second? Did you see Lawson Schaefer's crossover?
I did.
I've never been more excited in any moment than that crossover. If he made that layup, I was running out of Coleman Coliseum. I said, I've lived. Because he deserved it. The guy deserved it. Because he tried to get at Lawson on the other end, and he did the crossover step back. And I'm like, you feel proud of yourself. You did that to Lawson Schaefer. Couldn't do that against Herb. So, you know, congratulations. Yeah. You got your little highlight, you know, that you can send to the scouts. Like, oh, yeah. And then it gets like a 5'9 white guy from Alabama. Congratulations. But then Lawson Schaefer got over there. And he was like, choo-choo. And then he just danced around him, bro.
That was great audio right there.
Right?
I know you guys all could just picture it in your mind.
And he was like, oh. And then he did that one, and he got past him. I started jumping. I literally started jumping. I was like, oh, Lawson Schaefer just crossed this man.
He did.
I think that's the second best Lawson Schaefer moment I've ever had.
What's your top Lawson?
The first, my top Lawson Schaefer moment was, I think it was 2 years ago against South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And Lawson Schaefer was in the game. We were winning, obviously. So Lawson Schaefer was over in the corner. And this was, it was 2 years ago because that's when South Carolina had their run, right?
Yes.
In this term, yeah. So it was that year. So Lawson Schaefer's at the top of the key and he's just dribbling. He's just dribbling. And then all of a sudden, he starts to drive. And then he brings the ball back. And he does a step back three-pointer in the dude's face and swishes it. And when I tell you the roof exploded, like, all the students were done. Like, right. I've never seen, like, they were done. It was, oh, man. It was great.
Incredible.
That's one of my favorite Lawson Schaefer moments. I'm sorry. Yeah. I love that guy. Sure. I love that guy.
And then you got Lawson. He did not make the attempt, as you said, but he did register one rebound and one foul.
The one foul was a sacrifice.
It was.
It was a sacrifice. He had to get his boys in. He had to get his boys in. He did the one foul. I understand it. It's okay.
He did. And then, of course, Britton Johnson, the other one, registering just 1 minute, but recording one rebound.
That's all you need.
And losing one pair of shorts. Interesting.
Hey, man, you got to tie those up. You got to tie those, man. You
got
to tie the drawstrings, man.
You've been playing for long enough. We need you to tighten that up.
Hey, he'll fix it next game. He'll fix it next game.
Is it because he's the new guy? Did they, like, not let him choose what size pants he had? I mean,
he's still University of Alabama. He's still a recruit at the University of playing sports. He's still a recruit. He's still an athlete at the University of Alabama. So I assume they would definitely get
fancy warm-ups.
I would assume he would have the right ones. Size
pants. Maybe he was pranked by the equipment staff.
I don't think that's what it is. I feel like he literally just forgot to tie his drawstring, and it just came down.
I feel like he just was not expecting to get minutes against a top 20 team in Ole Miss.
And I mean, would you, honestly?
Why tie them?
I mean, would you? Like, at the start of the game, would you?
I would not have been expecting
And then,
to.
Like, honestly, he's just chilling on the bench. Yeah. So, like, does he really anticipate? Like, I mean, at some point you have to think, like, oh, we're up 20. I might actually be in here, you know? But, like, even still, you're kind of sitting down, so you're not really thinking about your drawstring. Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah, so.
I think we're gonna have to ask him about that
if he comes in the studio.
We're gonna try and get that for you guys. We'll work on getting Britton Johnson in studio.
I'm gonna ask him about my new nickname for them, the Snowflakes. I'm gonna see if he likes that.
Ask him, see if he likes it. You guys can let us know if you like it or if you don't.
Give us suggestions. Yeah.
Tweet at us. We love when you guys tweet at us.
I'm gonna mess around, and next thing I know, there's gonna be print out of snowflakes in the student section, and they're gonna be holding up snowflakes.
You have that much influence, Trevin?
I don't think so.
Maybe if I said it.
You don't get out of here, that nonsense. Oh my gosh. I'm just saying. Like, I might mess around and start a new nickname thing. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
We'll see what happens. And we're gonna look ahead. We've got the Baylor matchup on Saturday, like we said, an early game, but it's the SEC Big 12 Challenge.
Do you know what the matchup predictor has it at right now?
What do they have it at?
70% for Baylor.
For Baylor. Wow. That's an interesting.
According to the matchup predictor, we have a better chance of beating Mississippi State at home than we do have winning at Baylor.
I can see that they do put a lot of stock into home games in these BPI matchups on the ESPN predictors. So I'm not shocked by that, but the fact that it's 70-30 does surprise me a little bit, given our performance in recent games.
I don't think they took into account our performance in recent games. I don't think they've updated it since the Texas A&M game, to be honest with you. That's the only thing I can assume. Because I think it stays kind of constant for the most part.
Yeah.
Let me look at the Auburn. Yeah, Auburn hasn't changed at all. We're still, right. So it's. I don't think they've updated it.
Yeah. And so now let's look at beyond just Alabama and Baylor. We'll go game by game, and you give me who's going to win in this SEC versus Big 12 challenge.
Yes.
And we'll keep a tally.
All right.
And we'll see which conference will come out on top.
We should make a bet out of this.
We can't. We'll put an over-under on it, too.
We'll see. Someone has to say something embarrassing about Alabama basketball. Like, we have to make a very bold statement if we lose this.
Okay, we have to provide our hottest of hot
You
takes.
Have to get provide your hottest of hot takes if you lose this right here.
All
right. So I'm going to write my list down. All right, ready?
All right. So I'm going to go. All right.
Bama versus Baylor.
We'll go Bama-Baylor.
I'm taking Bama.
I'm taking Alabama.
All right, so then how many points do you think Bama's going to win by?
Oh, we're going full points.
For that one, for all this right, one only.
For this one, I'm going to go with a 10-point win.
I think it's less than Baylor. Five. I think it's less than five. So if it's more than five, right. If it's more than five, I'll you win. That. And if it's less than I'll five, I'll that. Win.
All right, now we're gonna move forward, and we've got Texas A&M against Kansas State. That's at Texas A&M.
I'll take Texas A&M.
I'm going to take them, too. They are the home team. I think that's going to play a factor there. We've got Florida at TCU.
Florida.
I'm going to go Florida, too. TCU just lost their point guard, Jalen Fisher. Mm-hmm. He is on the transfer market now. There's teams that will now be he'll be gauging the interest from different teams now that he has been released. He's suffered a lot of injuries, but he's still an important part of that team.
Mm-hmm.
And now we'll look forward to West Virginia at Tennessee. I got to go Tennessee there. Yeah, I think it'll be close.
I got to go Tennessee.
I mean, you got when you got a bet on it. You
Tennessee's at home.
Careful,
Tennessee's at home. I don't want to give that hot of a take.
Right. And then, all right, Kansas at Kentucky.
I'm taking Kansas.
I'm going to take Kentucky.
I'm taking Kansas.
All right, so that's our first diversion here.
Yeah.
Now, Arkansas and Texas Tech.
I'm going to Arkansas.
You're going to go Arkansas?
I'm going to go Arkansas.
Oh, this is a tough one because you know I've loved this Arkansas team. I've been hot on them for a while.
Texas Tech,
I know they just lost, but they're a top 25 program.
Hold on. I got to think about this again. Hold on. No, I'm going to Texas Tech.
I gotta, oh, you're flipping on
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I got to go Texas Tech. You can take Arkansas. I'm going to take Texas Tech. It's at Lubbock.
It is. It's in Lubbock. But this Arkansas team, I am a really big fan.
I'm going to Texas Tech. Texas Tech.
I'm going to go Texas Tech.
Oh, you
I'm
going to
go Texas Tech.
Dude, yeah, I should have stayed at Arkansas. My bad.
I just got to – they're at home. They're –
All right.
Iowa State at Ole Miss.
Iowa State all day.
You're taking Iowa State.
Iowa State all day.
I'm going to go with Ole Miss in a bounce back game. I think they need it.
I mean, you can try.
I think they need a bounce back game.
I mean, you can try.
All right. So, South Carolina and Oklahoma State.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I've got mine locked in for this one, but I'm gonna let you go first on this one.
I'm gonna go OK State.
You're gonna go Oklahoma State? Yeah. I'm gonna go South Carolina. South Carolina's been hot as of late. They're winning every game they play. Just beat Auburn, of course.
Right now I'm at 4-4 right now for
just beat Auburn. South Carolina playing great, and Oklahoma State just held open tryouts to join their basketball.
Oh, that show
team.
Was them. I want South Carolina. I want South Carolina. I want South Carolina. Huh, 5-3. That show was them, wasn't it?
Some players were dismissed from the program, and to fill those spots, they decided to allow students to come into the gym and show them what they had.
That's so frightening.
It's terrifying, almost
from
as scary as
from an NCAA standpoint, because that's borderline death penalty.
As a guy who was a fan of the Florida Gators growing up, we once had a kicker who was so bad that we decided to just
open tryouts
before a bowl game.
Yeah,
and we ended up signing a dental student for one game. We let him kick. He was way better than the other guy, at least. So I ended up enjoying it. It was a great storyline. But let's move on to Vanderbilt at Oklahoma.
I hate Oklahoma so much, I'm going to go Vandy.
I got to go Oklahoma on this one. Darius Garland's out. And
I hate Oklahoma so much, I got to go Vandy.
All right. And then our final matchup here, maybe we can get Bevo and Uga back together for a reunion. Maybe we'll get round two of the fight between the mascots. Bevo came out on top last time, but maybe Uga will be more prepared on his home turf, Texas and Georgia.
Georgia.
You're taking Georgia?
I'm taking Georgia.
I'm going to take Georgia. I originally had Texas in this one, but Texas has struggled as of late, and I think Tom Crean is a really good coach. I think that'll help Georgia. They're a building program right now. Not to say that Shaka Smart is not an excellent coach. He obviously is one of the top coaches. But originally what I had said was it came down to Kerwin Roach, I felt like, was the most experienced and most clutch of the playmakers.
Yeah.
But I think that Georgia at home, in maybe a little bit better form than Texas recently, will pull it out.
Okay.
So that's what – we'll have to keep an eye on that on Saturday. And what do we have the final tallies for? Who do we have winning, the SEC or the Big 12?
For me, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7-3 SEC.
SEC. And what was mine?
I forgot.
You haven't written down.
I didn't write yours down.
You didn't write
that was your
down.
Job.
All right.
That was your job to write yours
it.
Down.
I remember who I picked. Let's see.
I feel like yours came out to be 6-4 SEC.
I think that sounds about right. And so I'll actually be on assignment on Saturday. Will not be able to keep an eye close on these games on the TV.
I can just sit around and watch these all day.
But I will be tracking them on my phone. I will be in New Albany, Mississippi.
Tell them why.
Because I will be watching two now confirmed McDonald's All-Americans going at it. It will be James Wiseman against Trendon Watford, East High School from Memphis against Mountain Brook from Birmingham, squaring off in the...
It's such a weird place for them to play.
It is. They say it's a historical gym, but, I mean, really, what does that mean in terms of a high school gym?
It's old.
Right. And so, but it's the hotbed classic. They're going to play there. And there's a lot of really good teams there. Jalen Forbes, an Alabama commit, will be playing earlier on in the day. But that game between Wiseman and Watford, for those of you who plan to make the trip up to New Albany, about a 2.5 hour drive from Tuscaloosa, its tip-off will be at 6 o'clock at Memorial Gym, I believe is the title where they are playing. And so if you want to go see the number one recruit
another Memorial Gym for us to worry about.
Play against his good friend, who Alabama has been recruiting heavily. And you should head on up to New Albany this weekend, make a whole day trip out of it.
Avery Johnson will definitely be there.
Do you think he will be? Obviously,
I mean, two of his players are going to be, or two of the people he's trying to get are going to be playing there, right. So I would assume so.
But it all has to do with flights. Can he get from Waco, Texas, to New Albany, Mississippi? In what we have an 11 a.m. tip, so that helps him.
Yeah, he can definitely do that.
Definitely beneficial.
He can definitely do that.
But you talk about the game.
It's probably like
about one. He's obviously got obligations in the arena till about at least 1:30, if not 2. And then you talk about he's got to get on a flight and. To my knowledge, there's no airport in New Albany, so then you talk about a trip there. But I wouldn't be surprised to see run into Avery Johnson at the hotbed.
Yeah, don't be surprised on
Classic.
That
Classic. But a couple of guys who I fully expect to be there are Penny Hardaway and Mike Miller.
Yes.
Memphis, due to the AAC schedule.
Maybe you can ask Mike Miller what it's like to win an NBA championship
in front
of Penny Hardaway.
See, that's not where I thought you were going with that. Because of my connection to Mike Miller.
But yeah, one of the greatest Grizzlies.
He really was. And Penny Hardaway, one of the greatest Memphians.
Mike Miller is one of the underrated six men.
He really is an underrated six man. The things he did for that Heat team on those championship runs, really, everyone remembers the one shoe running down the court and just knocking.
Honestly, from those Heat games, most people remember LeBron and Dwayne Wade
Of course they do.
With the oop, and then they remember Ray Allen's three.
They remember Ray Allen three.
But they don't remember the grind from everything else that was in.
Of course
in
not.
That.
But the shoe was really his one highlight. Yeah.
Him playing on the one shoe and then making a three pointer.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
The Sports Center material.
Yeah.
And so
I remember that game.
A lot of people remember that. Of course, I knew Mike.
Does he have
his AAU team. Formerly M33M, now going under a different name because of NCAA rules and regulations, now being an assistant coach at the University of Memphis.
I have a question.
What's your question?
Does he still own the record for most points in the Grizzlies? Or did someone pass that? Because I think it's either most three-pointers or most points by a Grizzly. I think he owns one of those.
I don't think he holds the all-time record for points by a Grizzly. I'm pretty sure that one is held by one of the core four, as they call them, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen. Tony Allen, of course, is the leading scorer. But Mark Gasol and Mike Conley round out that group. But that group seems to be in jeopardy with Woj's reports that the Grizzlies are shopping them in hopes to build around Jaren Jackson. What do you got for me? Does Mike Miller hold any Grizzlies records? I'm not 100% sure.
According to Wikipedia, this is against Wikipedia,
yeah.
He holds the franchise record for most points scored in a single game with 45.
That one makes sense. I believe that one for sure.
That's what I meant.
And yeah. Had two stints with the Grizzlies, of course, at the beginning of his career. He played there, and then coming back towards the end of his career, as more of a mentor role, and a lot of guys who he played with really didn't think he was going to become a coach. I heard an interview with Chris Bosh recently. He did not see Mike Miller becoming a head coach or a coach at all. But
those are the ones you got to watch out for.
Seems to be something he's good at.
Yeah.
At least
bench,
the recruiting aspect.
Bench players and point guards make the best coaches because they have to see the game from a different angle. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why stars don't turn out to be good coaches. There's a reason why Bill Russell wasn't a good coach. There's a reason why Michael Jordan is not a good coach. And there's a reason why Steve Kerr is a good coach. It's because they have to view the game from a different lens and they watch a lot more than play. When you're playing, you're worried about scoring and doing stuff for the individual to help the team effort win. When you're watching the game, you're looking at how the pieces move together and you're helping your IQ standpoint.
Yeah.
So it's bench players and point guards. And I say point guards because they have to instruct the offense and put everybody in the positions to be successful. So point guards and bench players make the best coaches.
Yeah, and it helps that Mike Miller was not a LeBron kind of guy. Obviously, that's an extreme example. But a guy who just had the gifts and the talent just to be able to get into the NBA no matter what his surroundings was. He had to put in the work.
And also with bench players, like you said, it's not necessarily the gifts and the talents. It's about the smarts.
About the work that they put in to get
there. Yeah, it's the work and the smarts that keep you in the league.
Right, and so that's a big thing there. I expect to see them at the Hotbed Classic. Hope to see some of you guys there if you see me walking around the gym.
Yeah, if you can't make it to Waco, go to Mississippi. Yeah,
let me know, and be happy to talk to you guys about some Alabama hoops or whatever questions you have about basketball. Once again, I want to thank you guys for listening to the No Noise Podcast. We appreciate you guys checking us out each and every week. Hope to see you next week with more good news on the Alabama win streak.
Hopefully
we will be able to bring you that great news and keep things going in this stretch of six games. Once again, my name is James Fletcher.
I'm Trevor Pierre-Noel, and roll tide, everybody.